This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
And there's only one thing that I'm afraid of, and that's the people in elected office taking away my rights. I'm not afraid of the crook that's going to come to my door, because if my dogs don't get him, I will. And it's my job to defend myself. It's not your job to protect me. It's not your job to defend me. It's your job to protect the Constitution and protect my rights to defend myself.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have this far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So welcome aboard. A lot of things going on here on Agenda 21 Radio. And of course, we've had just a heck of a day so far, talking about the militias and talking about things going on in Redding, California, and Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and also in North Dakota. When the militia shows up, Antifa runs away as quickly as possible. That's what we've been finding out. And patriots are starting to step up all around the nation, especially out here in California. Watch out, Governor Newsom. Anyway, we got a lot of other things going on. This is a big day. And, of course, if you really want to know why we've got over here in the left hand, we've got all these riots and all this business going on with Antifa, is over here on the right hand, we've got Hillary Rodham Clinton had a problem with court yesterday. And now Rod Rosenstein is testifying before the Senate. And with us to help us suss through this right now, and we're going to probably chime in to the hearings as it's going on, is our very own Scott Adams. And Scott, before we get started on that, I want to talk about this this Dorn business. Everybody has been absolutely blown away by the video. Of course, they played it on Facebook Live. David Dorn.
That makes me want to cry. That one really touched me. I saw that. This guy was a police chief in St. Louis, and here he is trying to defend a pawn shop. People were trying to steal flat screens, and all of a sudden he gets shot, and he's bleeding there to death. And you could see him grasping onto his cell phone, and you could see him talking a little bit and fighting for his life. And this guy in the surrounding is trying to get somebody to help him. And these fools, man, I just can't get over it. That's got to be one of the lowest things. And, frankly, in Richmond, there are these protesters that set a house on fire with a woman, family, and children. And then they blocked the fire trucks from going to the scene. These are evil people. They always have been. The things that they did to Kavanaugh, the things they did to Trump and his family, these are the most evil scumbags on the planet. And they represent the Democrat Party. They're the lawyers. They're the protesters. Hey, folks, they're the paid rioters. They're all these things. And these radical left mayors and governors are giving a passive green light to allowing this to happen. They're trying to keep you in control with using their enforcement for the wrong purposes with COVID. And then they're trying to, give rise to rioting and basically racial divide. And they're trying to drum this stuff up. And the only way that these people actually successfully riot is if you give them space to destroy, as Stephanie Rollins Blake started. You know, she initiated that with Freddie Gray.
Right.
The point is that giving people space to destroy is really a coded word for saying, we are not going to hurt you. Just go ahead and wreak havoc. And they did. And it always ends up badly. It was never a good policy, but it started on the Obama regime. And, of course, Trump is saying, this is a joke. Send in the National Guard. And you know what's happening is if you go to Project protestjobs.com, protestjobs.com, just check it out. You'll see you could buy rioters for $99 a pop, and or $129, depending on what plan you get. You pay a little extra, you get a celebrity. So these are rioters that are told, you know, you could break windows, do this, do that, all kinds of stuff. All these bricks are showing up in different places. So the point is that it gives people like Don Lemon and Fredo and all these losers on the mainstream media that are radical left-wing libtards. They are fueling this flame, but they couldn't fuel listen to this now. They could not fuel that flame if the flame wasn't allowed to flirt.
That's right.
Right. It's a coordinated effort between the radical left and the mainstream media. We saw it play out in COVID identically. It's playing out with the riots, and it's the same cities. It's the same governors. It's the same states that are advocating for, vote by mail and COVID, the fear of COVID, but that nobody had a fear of COVID. Big Bird de Blasio in New York. Well, yeah, that was one thing. That was COVID. But now, you know, the right to protest trumps COVID.
Yeah, where's all the social distancing going on in these riots or protests? There's no, I mean, and of course the masks are really used just for disguise. You know, that's really what they're used for. And of course, what that means is that you can't use the cameras to take the pictures of them. Can't do that. I mean, they have a mask on after all. But, you know, you can get the facial features off. There's ways to get around it. But my point is that having everybody all masked up, you know, you create a culture of them versus us. See, it's dividing the country just that way. You know, if you want to destroy your enemy, divide and conquer. And, you know, there's the masks, as an example, is just one of those methods to do that. You know, we have mask shaming out here in many of the communities. If you're not wearing your mask, you must be evil. And of course, on the other side, if I'm not wearing a mask, I look at them and say, you're stupid. You're ignorant. So it's dividing based upon that, which a lot of people might not look at them wearing the mask. They think that they're doing the right thing because the, quote, government tells them to do it. Are you kidding me?
I would stand up to a bunch of people wearing masks shaming me, and I'm not wearing a mask, and I would point to my face and I'd say, herd immunity.
That's right. That's right. That's your response. It's herd immunity. And then, of course, they don't understand that. It just proves their ignorance. You know, herd? What does that mean? You know, what's a herd of cattle? You think I'm a cow? Well, if the person is overweight, maybe. Maybe. So what's your play on what's going on right now? You've been listening to the Rosenstein thing, and I have an inkling we're going to probably chime in right now. He's being questioned from what I'm looking at the NBC feed, which is a pool feed to begin with. What's your play on what's going on so far with the Rosenstein situation? Or do you want to talk about Hillary first, then dive into Rosenstein?
Well, Hillary's big because of the Hillary is a big deal because of she was denied. I was surprised, actually. She was rejected for her appeal to not testify. And I said to myself, you know, with a three-judge panel, two judges were Obama and one person was W. Bush. All three were not our friends on the Patriot side. And lo and behold, they actually ruled that she has to testify on September 21st, which is pretty amazing. I think that's one of the huge stories because, see, she's gotten away with a statute of limitation deal with Benghazi, but not so much with the email gate. But she's lied in both cases under oath on a steady. And so in the history, in the past, in Benghazi, for example, she lied through her teeth through that 11-hour day of testimony. And she got away with a lot. Now we have new information that's come out. The State Department's revealed a lot. The Judicial Watch's FOIA requests have revealed a lot. So basically, there's new information that says she was lying. So what's going to happen is if she were to testify and try to stay in check with her lies from the past, that brings up all new perjury charges. All those lies come to present. They're current again because she's lying on it's a new lie, right? So she's lying to protect her old lies. So she lied to protect her old lies. And if she does that, she's opens herself to perjury charges again, fresh new ones. But if she decides to say, I can't do that, I can't commit perjury because they're out to get me, so I'm going to go ahead and tell the truth as much as I can, then it's going to smack dab in the, it's going to draw conflict with the Benghazi testimony, smack dab into that. So she's going to basically be a liar one way or the other. She's going to either lie now or lie then, but she can't lie in both places. Otherwise, she's going to jail, and where she belongs anyway. That's a big story. And, of course, this Rosenstein story, he's throwing McCabe under the bus, which is kind of interesting.
Well, let me back up here in the Hillary Clinton thing here real quick, because this is Fenton's group, Judicial Watch, that has filed a case against her regarding the email server business, which goes back a long ways. But, you know, she came back and lied about that and all the different things. And, of course, you know, from whitewashing to smashing servers to the whole nine yards. And of course, the secrets that got out, that's the other thing. National secrets got out to the whole world, literally. And we covered all that stuff endlessly about all the different things that were going on there. But the bigger point is that now she's coming forward. What is the case that Judicial Watch is actually making?
I'd have to look it up, actually. I would have to draw reference to that. They are basically saying that a lot of the information that was withheld needs to be brought to light because those cases were not adjudicated. None of them were. And so new information has come to light based on their FOIA requests, and they want more disclosure. And so what was happening is the Department of Justice and the State Department was stonewalling and reluctant, and they were just, you know, basically out of their cold, dead hands would come the new information. So finally, when they got the new information, what they were doing was saying, because they fought it so hard and long, the judge started to have questions because they started to get new information, right? And the situation
was... my understanding, and I have not looked at the case or anything like that, but I do know that there's fresh information based upon other investigations that, you know, looking back at her, it's like, wait a minute, these things are not jiving, and that's where the lawsuit, I think, came in. And then that's why, of course, now I really believe that the panel rejected it because there's fresh information and that they recognize the fresh information and evidence. And they're not going to go against, just my guess. Now, let's go to Rod Rosenstein and what's he up to right now. He's testifying right now. I want to get it on air, but what do you think's going on there with him?
With Rod Rosenstein?
Yep, and his testimony today.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I actually was kind of interested in that. It seems like he's pulling a Hillary. He's talking his way out of a paper bag. And of course, you know, leave it to the Republican senators to, you know, to give it to him that way. But I thought that the opening statement by Lindsey Graham was very strong. And then he asked a bunch of series of questions. I'm waiting for people like Ted Cruz to start asking some questions. Grassley's going to have another round. Right. Grassley's been on the forefront of this stuff. We just had Cornyn from Texas on with Rosenstein. And so basically that situation is where Rosenstein's between a rock and a hard place. What Rosenstein is saying so far is that he could only act on what he knew. But the fact of the matter is, Paul, and you and I both know this, that August 2017, you and I knew what was going on. We knew that the whole Comey firing was legit. We knew that Rosenstein was a swine. We knew that Mueller was, you know, going to be the blockade to obstruct the investigation that was going to look into the investigators. We knew all that. And we knew that what Rosenstein did basically behind Sessions' back without any notice to the president, hiring Mueller the way he did,
right.
We knew this was all part of the deep state.
Well, let's chime in right now. Lindsey Graham seems to be on a rage. I'm watching it right now. Hang on.
Who hated Trump. If people had a political bias, an agenda to destroy him before he was elected and after he was elected. And we're going to get to the bottom of it. And if you want people subpoenaed, I will certainly listen to what you got to say. But this stinks. This is a sad episode in the history of the FBI. There was no there in August 2017. And it may not bother you, but it bothers us. And I hope it will bother the American people and we'll fix it. Senator Lee.
On June 29th, 2017, you signed off on the third FISA renewal application. Did you read that application?
Yes.
So you, having been asked to sign off on it, you had read it. Were you aware of the multiple errors and omissions that were later discovered and disclosed by the Inspector General?
No.
Were you aware that the information provided by Christopher Steele, commonly referred to as the Steele dossier, was the basis of the assertions in the FISA application?
I believe, Senator, that some of the assertions in the application are from Steele, my understanding is, but only some.
Were you aware of the fact that the Steele dossier, which you've just acknowledged, was at least the partial basis for this, was bought and paid for by the Democratic National Committee and shared with the Hillary Clinton campaign?
I don't believe I had that detailed information at the time.
Okay, so you're being asked to do something significant. You're asked as the Deputy Attorney General, the Acting Attorney General in this circumstance, to sign off on something. And yet you don't have a critical piece of information. That's a problem.
Yes, sir.
It seems to me. It's a problem, especially given that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act can be used, can be manipulated, and in fact has been abused and manipulated so as to spy on a presidential campaign. A campaign that turned out to be for the man who became the 45th President of the United States. Were you aware that the application mischaracterized Christopher Steele's past work with the FBI as a confidential human source and failed to include information from his source questioning his reliability?
No, I was not aware of that.
If you had known about these errors and omissions as of June 29, 2017, would you have signed off on it?
No.
Why not?
Senator, my understanding is that these FISA applications followed a very rigorous process. And that they were accurate, that they were verified. The whole principle of having an agent sign it under oath is that you can rely on the facts.
And the whole point of having the Deputy Attorney General sign off on them was to have somebody who would be accountable to someone who was in turn accountable to the voters who could verify their accuracy. Is that right? And yet that did not happen.
I don't think that the idea is for the person who the person who approves the filing, which is the Attorney General, the Deputy, or the National Security Assistant Attorney General, to personally verify the facts. It's to make sure the accurate process has been followed and that the document sets forth a proper basis.
Sure.
It did set forth a
but
proper
surely
basis.
The process isn't an ass. The process isn't there simply to provide cover to do something unlawful. The process is there, ideally, one would hope, to make sure the rule of law is respected.
Correct.
Before you became the acting attorney general in this context, Didn't you at some point get a sense for the politicization within the FBI, at the top level of the FBI, even beyond Jim Comey?
No.
You didn't have any sense that there was a targeting of a presidential candidate and later someone who became the president of the United States?
I did not have that impression.
What was the legal basis for appointing Robert Mueller? And didn't you become concerned at some point about the composition of Mueller's staff? Let's take, for example, Mr. Weissman. Mr. Weissman is now fundraising for Joe Biden, as is his right. Previously, he was an advocate of the Hillary Clinton campaign. Did that bother you, that you had known Democratic operatives, overwhelmingly Democratic-leaning people who were part of this team?
It would have been preferable, Senator, to have a more politically diverse group. But if they followed the rules, their political ideology wouldn't matter.
If everyone followed the rules, political ideologies wouldn't matter.
Senator, I had Bob Mueller in charge of this, and based upon that and based upon my conversations with him, I'm fairly confident that the political bias did not enter into that investigation.
At any point were you asked by any member of Congress to launch a criminal investigation of President Trump?
I don't believe so.
Getting back to the FISA application process, why didn't you urge the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court to appoint an amicus curiae, given the obvious sensitivities of this investigation?
Well, Senator, I have to tell you in context, you asked me about reading the FISA. There are a lot of FISA applications that come through. Some are more significant than others. This one was unusual in that I already knew about it because of the Russia investigation. Most of the FISA applications that are presented to me, I'm the last eyes on them before they're filed to the court, and I know nothing about them. This one I actually knew a fair amount about, and they gave it to me in advance so I could review it. I'm not sure I read every page, but I was familiar with what was in it. But if you read the report, and I know most people haven't seen the unredacted version, but my recollection of it, I haven't seen it for some time, is it was actually fairly persuasive. And it had already been approved three times. This was just a reauthorization.
Thank you. Now, you indicated moments ago that Mr. McCabe did not lie to you, but you also acknowledged that he was not fully candid. What's the difference?
Well, lying is when you ask somebody a direct question, you get a false answer. Candor is when you're forthcoming with information that somebody needs to know. And I believe, Senator, that Mr. McCabe should have recognized that when I became acting attorney general, I needed to know about Mr. Comey's memos. I needed to understand that, and he did not tell that to me until a couple of hours before they showed up in the New York Times.
So what and when did he tell you about the Comey memos, and when should he have done that? And also, he waited for at least a week before telling you about some of the intel-related concerns. Weren't you his boss?
Correct.
And so he had an obligation to tell you. And yet,
I don't know if he had a legal obligation, Senator, but my philosophy as a manager was that you have a responsibility to tell the boss things that you know they need to know.
Right.
And that's a pretty important thing that I would have needed to know.
And so that would have been regarded as material. The omission of that, had you been aware of it, probably would have been grounds for termination.
If I had asked him and he had misrepresented it, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see my time has expired.
White House.
Thank you, Chairman. Welcome back to the incredible shrinking Judiciary Committee, Mr. Rosenstein. We used to have a say in circuit court nominees. Now nothing protects them, even having to come from our states. We gave that away. We used to oversee executive privilege claims. Now a witness utters the word privilege and we shrivel up. We gave that away. We used to screen out extremist and unqualified judges. Now it's hard to see any bottom to whom we'll confirm. We gave that away. And we face the danger now that this committee, this historic committee, is going to begin running political investigatory errands. I think facing that risk, it is worth having some assurances about how this is going to be conducted. And I say this based on the experience of looking at the House Intelligence Committee and the Republican side of that committee and its efforts to disparage and interfere with the Mueller campaign. That has not yet been fully investigated. I don't believe that Mueller investigated any linkage between the House Intelligence Committee Republicans' efforts and the White House, or their efforts and Trump's lawyers. But I strongly suspect that the House Intelligence Committee Republicans were advised, controlled, or directed by Trump lawyers, either in the White House or on the Trump legal team. And that sorry experience, if that is in fact the case, again, investigation would reveal it, but we have had no investigation, should not be replicated in the Senate Judiciary Committee. I hope that we can receive appropriate assurances here that whatever investigation we undertake will not be controlled by the Trump White House and will not be controlled by the Trump campaign. As we pursue this oversight, one other aspect of the incredible shrinking Judiciary Committee is that we used to require the FBI and the Department of Justice to answer our questions. Now we just get ignored. There is a bin someplace at the FBI and the Department of Justice into which our questions get thrown. And Mr. Rosenstein, you were sworn in on February 1st, 2017. As Deputy Attorney General, you resigned from the department on May 11th, 2019. In between those dates, we had hearings on May 2nd, 2017, May 24th, 2017, June 27th, 2017, October 18th, 2017, December 6th, 2017, February 6th, 2018, March 13th, 2018, June 12th, 2018, June 18th, 2018, June 26th, 2018, July 18th, 2018, July 31st, 2018, December 12th, 2018, and May 1st, 2019, with Department of Justice witnesses, and none of the committee's questions for the record were answered. Ever. None. Can you explain why that took place, Mr. Rosenstein, under your watch? Where was the policy not to answer this committee's questions? Did it come from you? Did it come from the Attorney General? Did it come from the White House? Did it come from OMB? Why were QFRs never answered? Where was that policy founded?
Senator, I recall answering some correspondence.
Letters are a whole separate issue. I've got a whole separate case on those, but I'm focusing now on committee questions for the record. Why not? Well, where's the policy from? Who told you not to answer these questions? Where did that come from? Where is that in the department?
I know that I testified in my confirmation hearing, which would have been in March of 2017, and I answered questions for the record, I believe, and following, including there may have been some from you after that hearing.
These are all the ones I listed, and in all of them, no questions for the record were answered. That's a lot of hearings with no questions for the record answered. Where did that come from?
I don't believe that I testified at any of those hearings, Senator, so it's just not...
No, I'm thinking that there's a policy at the Department of Justice not to answer committee QFRs. That's the only explanation, unless you think it's a coincidence that in all those hearings, no QFRs got answered. Something's up, and it makes me really frustrated. And we sent a letter to Chairman Graham, all of us, on February 11th about this, of this year, because it has gotten so frustrating that there is a policy somewhere in this administration not to answer committee QFRs. And now we can't even get a QFR answered. Now, to the clear blue sky, the first thing we're investigating is the exact thing that the Trump campaign wants us to investigate. The only time we ask for anything from this department is when it's a political errand. And every other time, you can't even get a decent QFR answered. Ever. And I can go through the letters that I haven't gotten any answer to either.
Shocking.
But there is a stonewall, and we should not be selective about whose information gets through the stonewall at the department. And this, Mr. Rosenstein, happened on your watch. My time is up.
Senator Whitehouse, Senator Cruz.
It's amazing. Is that the White House, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, may I ask a QFR?
Yes, you may.
as to what the heck is going on with our non-response to QFRs. That one may go in the bin at the Department of Justice as well with all the others and never get answered. But the day will come.
I agree.
When there is a Democrat Department of Justice and Attorney General. The day will come when there is a Democrat sitting in that chair and a policy that you don't ever get QFRs answered by the department that we oversee is not a good policy. It is someone's policy, and I want it stopped.
Thank you very much. And as to the hearing yesterday, there were a lot of questions asked about COVID-19 and prisons, and I expect hopefully those will get answered, particularly Senator Blumenthal's questions about the court case.
Shocking.
So, point well made. Senator Cruz.
Here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Prior to 2016 and 2017, the worst known instance of abuse of power by an administration was Richard Nixon's abuse of his administration to target his political enemies. By any measure, what the Obama-Biden administration did in 2016 and 2017 makes everything Richard Nixon even contemplated pale in comparison. And Richard Nixon rightfully faced impeachment and ultimately resigned as a consequence of his misconduct. The evidence that has been made public has made clear that the Obama administration targeted his political opponents, targeted President Trump and his campaign, unleashed, weaponized, and politicized the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the intelligence community, and that the decision-making to do so went right up to the very top. We know that on January 4th, 2017, the FBI concluded in a document that has just been released that General Michael Flynn was, quote, no longer a viable candidate to be part of this larger case. Their investigation did not yield any information on which to predicate further investigative efforts. The FBI is closing this investigation. That was January 4th, 2017. The next day, James Comey, the director of the FBI, is sitting in the Oval Office with Barack Obama, with Joe Biden, and James Comey, according to a memo from Susan Rice, one of the most remarkable CIA memos written in Washington, written on her last day in office, an email to herself saying, by the way, this investigation into the National Security Advisor coming in to the new office, the president has said, do it, quote, by the book. She says by the book three times. James Comey tells the president, we're investigating Michael Flynn by the book. Well, unless the book is Richard Nixon's Watergate, the day before the FBI said they were closing the investigation, and there's James Comey telling Barack Obama, we're going after General Flynn, a decorated three-star general, the incoming national security advisor of the president, with Joe Biden sitting right there nodding along. Joe Biden himself personally unmasks Michael Flynn's name. That's the world you came into, Mr. Rosenstein. That's the Department of Justice you came into, where it had been corrupted and politicized. You've read the Inspector General report, Mr. Rosenstein?
I've read most of it, yes, sir.
You've read the 17 repeated material misstatements documented within the Inspector General report?
I have read that, yes, sir.
You're aware one of those is a lawyer fraudulently altering an email, creating counterfeit evidence that became the predicate for a sworn statement in the FISA court.
That is in the Inspector General's report, yes, sir.
Are you aware of other instances of Department of Justice employees fraudulently creating evidence to submit to court?
Every instance that I'm aware of, Senator, would be appropriately investigated, and hopefully appropriate action would be taken.
Mr. Rosenstein, on May 17th, you appointed Bob Mueller the special counsel. On June 29th, you signed the third FISA application. On August 2nd, you signed the second scope application. You came into a profoundly politicized world, and yet all of this was allowed to go forward under your leadership. That unfortunately leads to only two possible conclusions. either that you were complicit in the wrongdoing, which I don't believe was the case, or that your performance of your duties was grossly negligent. Was there any
that standard, Senator?
Was there any more important case the Department of Justice had than an investigation into whether the President of the United States is a Russian asset colluding against the United States?
Well, that's the way you're characterizing the investigation, Senator. There was certainly lots of important investigations, but I view this as one of the most important.
Okay. You just told Senator Lee you read the FISA application. At the time you read the FISA application, did you know that the primary source behind the Steele dossier had disavowed it and said it's not true?
At the time I reviewed it, and I'm not sure I read every word, but I certainly reviewed it, and no, I did not know that.
At the time you reviewed it, did you know that there was significant exculpatory material that was omitted from it?
Absolutely not.
At the time you reviewed it, did you know that a lawyer on your staff had fraudulently altered material as a basis for a FISA application?
That lawyer was not on my staff, but I was not aware of it.
It was on the FBI staff?
Correct.
And the FBI reports to the Deputy Attorney General?
Correct.
At the time that you reviewed it, did you know the Steele dossier was paid for by the DNC?
I don't believe so.
Did you ask any of those questions?
Well, the questions I would have asked, Senator, would have been, is the information represented to me verified? And I would anticipate, Senator, that if somebody knew that it wasn't, or that there was some issue about the credibility of the informant or the accuracy of the evidence, that
Mr. Rosenstein, when you're going into a department that has been politicized, I understand it's easier just not to rock the boat, not to question the people there. But you were the acting Attorney General of the United States and had a responsibility not to allow political targeting. Let me ask you, did it strike you as strange? And my time has expired, so I'm going to leave this as the last question. Did it strike you as strange that the FBI and the Department of Justice was going after a three-star general, the incoming national security advisor to the president, who they already said they were going to dismiss the case against, and their predicate for all of this is the Logan Act, which you know perfectly well is an unconstitutional law that has no one has ever been prosecuted under in the history of the Department of Justice, and should have been laughed out of the room in any responsible Department of Justice if someone had suggested, we're going to go after the incoming national security advisor for violating the Logan Act, which says an American citizen can't talk to a foreign leader. I guarantee you today, right now, John Kerry is violating the Logan Act. Now, fortunately, it's an unconstitutional law, so who cares? Why did you not laugh this out of the room, and why didn't you get to answers on this? Why did you let this pile of partisan lies consume the country for 2 years?
Senator, I appreciate you've packed a lot into your question, and I know the time is limited. First of all, Senator, I think it's not accurate to say that we didn't rock the boat. As you may be aware, when I went into that job with Attorney General Sessions, we actually made a lot of significant changes. It wasn't just about the Russian investigation. There was a lot more going on in the Department of Justice. And so I would not have been reluctant in any way to rock the boat if I believed that there was something improper going on. With regard to General Flynn, to take that particular issue, Senator, my understanding at the time that I arrived was that General Flynn had lied to the vice president and to FBI agents. And that, I believe, was the primary issue that was under investigation at the time. I didn't know all the background that appears in the pleading that was filed by the U.S. attorney in D.C.
But you didn't bother to ask. You didn't actually bother to drill in and say, show me the background. You know, this may be the most important case we've got in the whole country. Let me actually do more than just rubber stamp the document put in front of me.
I don't believe I was rubber stamping, Senator, and I fully appreciate your concern. And obviously, you always wish you could have done more. But we did have 70,000 cases filed that year. I devoted more attention to this case than to anything else, but I still didn't know everything. And so that's the best I can give you, Senator.
Senator Klobuchar, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome back, Mr. Rosenstein.
Thank you, Senator.
I have made very clear that I think that it is absurd to be having this hearing. I know we're going to have a hearing, which I appreciate, on criminal justice reform in a few weeks after the murder of George Floyd in my state. But I think we could also be doing so many other things on the pandemic, on the effect that the pandemic has had on immigration policy, but we are here today. I thought that was absurd, but then I heard Senator Cruz. And I have to say, to compare Richard Nixon to Barack Obama, Richard Nixon, who left the White House in disgrace, to compare him with President Obama, who left the White House with grace and with dignity, something we miss very much, especially this week, when we saw the President of the United States using the Bible as a prop in front of a church in Washington, D.C., after the Justice Department tear-gassed peaceful protesters in order to set the stage for that press conference. No, I would like the record to reflect that this comparison is not only wrong today between Richard Nixon and Barack Obama, it will never stand the test of time. So let me start out with this, Mr. Rosenstein. You appointed Special Counsel Robert Mueller to oversee the FBI's counterintelligence investigation to ensure that it was conducted independently in May of 2017. The special counsel found that Russian interference in our election was sweeping and systematic, and that the investigation, as you know, ultimately resulted in 34 indictments of individuals and the convictions of six of President Trump's associates and advisors on federal charges. Last May, you said that there was, quote, overwhelming evidence that Russian operatives hacked American computers and defrauded American citizens, end quote, as, quote, part of a comprehensive Russian strategy to influence elections, promote social discord, and undermine America, end quote. Do you still agree with that statement?
Yes, I do.
Are you aware of any facts that call into question the finding in the special counsel's report that the Russian government interfered in the 2016 presidential election in sweeping and systematic fashion, or that the Russian government perceived it would benefit from a Trump presidency and worked to secure that outcome? Are there any facts that
you're quoting from the report, Senator? I certainly believe that Director Mueller's report accurately reflects his conclusions.
Okay.
Obviously, I don't know what's in the mind of the Russians. We can only evaluate the evidence that we have, and that's what the intelligence suggests.
Okay. Are you aware of any facts that call into question the assessment of FBI Director Wray, which is, by the way, backed up by many, many Trump intelligence officials, that Russia's interference in our elections is ongoing, that its interference in the 2018 midterms, in Christopher Wray's words, were a dress rehearsal for the 2020 elections? Are you aware of anything that would lead you to think that Russian interference in our elections going forward has stopped?
I am not aware of anything that would suggest it stopped. And while I was in office, Senator, I actually spent a fair amount of time working with Director Wray and other officials to try to combat foreign interference.
Okay. And given the threat to our democracy posed by foreign election interference, while we, by the way, have the threat of voter suppression due to this pandemic and other laws, it is critical that we remain focused on the facts. The Inspector General's report found on page 17 that the investigation, the Crossfire Hurricane investigation, was open to determine whether people associated with the Trump campaign were coordinating with the Russian government. Do you disagree with that?
That is my understanding, Senator.
And so we are clear. Coordinating with a foreign power as part of a political campaign, especially a foreign adversary like Russia, would pose a threat to national security. Is that correct?
It would if it were true, yes.
Okay. And do you agree that interference in our elections by foreign governments constitutes a national security threat?
Yes.
Okay. So that is why I would like to look forward. And when you look forward, what do you see in front of us? You see this ongoing threat to our democracy, which is why I have advocated so strongly, along with Senator Lankford, Senator Graham, so many, for backup paper ballots in our election. It is part of the reason why I think that the mail-in ballots, in addition to protecting the health and safety of voters, would protect us from foreign interference. And that's why you have Republican-dominated states like Utah have used these mail-in ballots. It would be helpful in that way. And one other policy idea here is that we need to do, as we continue to see ongoing attempts by foreign governments to influence our elections on social media. Senator Graham and I and Senator Warren have put forward the Honest Ads Act. Are you familiar with that bill?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, that is a bill that would require the same disclosure rules and disclaimer rules for political ads that we have for ads that we see on TV. It would simply require that when someone gets an ad for a political campaign or an issue ad that's paid for and meets the federal standards that they would in other forums, that you have to have a disclosure on them and that you have to make a public record of this ad. And I just want to again remind my colleagues of this bill, because after years, Senator McCain first did this bill with me, it's still sitting dormant. And I think that when you look at what the Senate Intelligence Committee just recommended, was that we should bring our laws into the 21st century to ensure that voters are able to know who is paying to influence our political system, at the very least, when we know we also have unpaid influence. Do you think it would be helpful to know who is paying to influence our political system?
Senator, I'm very reluctant to express a view about your legislation on the spur of the moment, but I'll be happy to take a look at it.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Senator Hawley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to start by noting my surprise to hear from my Democrat colleagues that the Mueller report is now of no consequence. After what they put this country through for years on end, endless investigations, millions of dollars spent, an impeachment inquiry against the President of the United States, and now we hear from person after person on that side of the dais that the Mueller report is of no consequence. No consequence? I kind of happen to think that the successful weaponization of the FBI by a presidential campaign, by the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign, for the first time in American history, getting the FBI to submit to a federal court false information, to get a wiretap during a presidential campaign, I kind of think that that is a relevant piece of information that maybe ought to be within the jurisdiction and the cognition of this committee. Of course, now my Democrat friends say there's nothing to see here, because now we have one of the largest scandals ever to engulf the FBI and the DOJ. Let me just remind you, Mr. Rosenstein, about what the FISA court said when it found out that it had been systematically lied to by the FBI and the Department of Justice. This is what the court said, sua sponte, on its own, and I quote, "The FBI's handling of the Carter Page applications, as portrayed in the Inspector General's report, was antithetical to the heightened duty of candor that is owed to the court. The frequency with which these representations made by FBI personnel turned out to be unsupported or contradicted by information in their possession and with which they withheld information detrimental to their case calls into question whether information contained in other FBI applications is reliable," end quote. In other words, the FISA court now wonders if it can trust anything that the FBI says. Anything. Now, you signed off on a FISA application to a federal court in an ex parte proceeding, which means the other side didn't have any chance to argue it. You signed off on it. It had 17 material misstatements, falsehoods, omissions. You signed off on it. You also said at the time you thought it was an above average application.
Correct.
How could you sign off on something with this number of misrepresentations that the FISA court later came back and said, this destroys our trust in the FBI? You signed off on it personally. How could this happen?
I approved the submission of it, and four federal judges signed off on it too, Senator, because, like me, they believed that the information had been verified and was accurate.
Did they have a duty to verify the information?
No, the agents had a duty to verify.
Oh, so you did not have a duty to verify the information?
I had a duty.
It's your name on the application.
Well, I had a duty to make sure it had been verified.
Did you rubber stamp it?
Senator, the Deputy Attorney General or the Attorney General.
Just answer my question. Did you rubber stamp? You said a second ago to Senator Cruz,
no,
you said
I didn't
rubber stamp it.
If you'd like me to explain, I will. But I certainly.
But you also testified today that you didn't read it. So I'm curious.
No, I didn't say
that. How is it? Would you like us to have your testimony read back to you? You said, I can't say that I read it. I don't think I read every page. I mean.
Yes, I did say that. Yes.
But, okay, so you didn't rubber stamp it, but you didn't read it.
You know, Senator, I have to explain the process.
I think we're familiar with the process.
No,
the OIG gave us the process. By the time it got to you, you had 17 critical errors, falsehoods, omissions, leading a federal court to say they have never seen anything like this and they can't trust anything else the FBI says. And let me ask you this. Who are we to hold responsible? Yes. You're saying it's not you.
No, I'm saying, Senator, that I am accountable for it. But the question is, why did it happen? Now, I'm no longer in the department, but there are people who are there who I expect will figure out why it happened and will fix the problem. So I'm not trying to deny.
Do you have any theories about what the problem might be?
I only know what the Inspector General's report reflects, Senator. And again, I've been gone for 13 months, so I have no insight.
Wouldn't you agree with me that a process that is so corrupted that it resulted in the abuse of a federal court in an ex parte proceeding during a presidential campaign is a threat to American democracy? Is a threat to the integrity of our elections? Wouldn't you agree with that?
It's certainly a threat to the integrity of the judicial system and the FISA process, but I need to explain to you, Senator, that when you're running an organization with 115,000 people, you're not going to be able to personally verify the information.
No, I know. So, and that's why you can't be held responsible.
No, I am.
The FBI says they can't be held
responsible.
And so at the end of the day, it's nobody's fault. FISA court has been misled. The FISA court is saying we can't trust anything the FBI says, but nobody's to blame for it. So let me just ask you, who should we hold responsible? What do you want this committee to do? The other side wants us to do nothing. They don't want to talk about it. They're happy for these abuses to go on, apparently. What do you suggest that we do?
I think, Senator, there are issues of accountability and blame. I'm accountable.
Boy.
I'm here being chastised by you, and that's part of my accountability. But the question is blame. What went wrong? And we need to figure out what went wrong. And I think when you say I signed off on it, it suggests that my responsibility was to actually do the investigation and verify the information. That's just not the responsibility.
I'll verify
the
information.
The responsibility is to make sure we've got an accurate process in place that guarantees the integrity of the applications.
And but that process wasn't in place.
It turned out that it wasn't. Exactly. And so if I'm at fault because I had a reason to know that or should have known that.
Reason to know it. He sounds like Comey.
But I just don't know. I didn't see that in the IG report. I didn't see him blaming me or my predecessors. And that's all I know about it, Senator. So I certainly am accountable for it. But in order to solve this problem, yelling at me is not going
to
solve the problem. We need to figure
out
what
happened. We need to solve the problem, see.
People engage in misconduct.
He's accountable for it.
Problems and fix them so it won't happen again.
Yeah, of course. Well, thank you, Mr. Rosenstein, for your service, and we'll certainly, I'm sure this committee will take every pain not to hold you accountable or responsible. Apparently, we can't hold anybody accountable or responsible, Mr. Chairman. So I don't know what this committee is left to do, but I do know this. What has happened is unacceptable, and we've heard the FBI director sit in the seat that you're in, Mr. Rosenstein, and say he's not accountable. He says he's not making any changes. In fact, he's done nothing, the current FBI director, to address this situation. Nobody seems to want to do anything. Meanwhile, we're in another presidential election year. I look forward to hearing about how the FBI has weaponized the FISA court again in this election year. Who knows? We'll be hearing about that in 2 or 3 years from now. This circumstance is simply not acceptable, Mr. Chairman, and that's why I'm glad we're doing this, but we've got to hold somebody accountable for it.
Senator, as I said,
Senator,
I agree with you that... I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, if I could just finish the answer that, again, there are questions of accountability and questions of blame, and it is the responsibility
Brother.
Of Director Ray to solve these problems, and I don't know.
This is what you get, guys. This is what you get. Anyway, we got to run for time, and enough of the lying by Rod Rosenstein. He sounds just like Comey, doesn't he? I wonder if they've talked to one another. Anyway, I want to thank Scott Adams for being with us here on the, from his show, the Scott Adams Show, jumping in, giving us a little bit of insight in this hearing here. Lindsey Graham, of course, is the Judiciary Committee Chair, Republican from South Carolina, and he's chairing this committee. There's nobody in the room, hardly, just a few people asking questions. It's kind of interesting. This is not the big drama, of course, in Washington now, but it is the bigger drama that they're trying to deflect from by having all these different riots, correct? Just, I mean, none of the Democrats are in there, of course, except for they come in from one or other at a time. And right now we're watching one of the senators having a little trouble with his microphone, which is kind of it. Chris Coons, Delaware. Delaware. California Air Resources Board. That's where they have their corporate headquarters. Did you know that? Mary Nichols? Oh, wow. Just a little throwback. Anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, A21R.com. It's A21R.com. And of course, NewCaliforniaState.com. NewCaliforniaState.com. State of the future. And remember, stay strong, America. Stay strong. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.